Now entering the Royal Rumble, Bret the Hitman Hart.
Welcome, North South Connection Podcast Network, to now entering the Royal Rumble, which you've already heard, but I want to tell you what it's about. Now, if you've just joined us from the North South Connection Podcast Network, you've been listening for a while, then you recognize our voices. I'm Aaron. JT, you there?
I'm here. Hi, Aaron. This is JT.
Yeah. Look, we're trying out a new thing, all right? It's a brand new concept. So what are we doing here? Look, we are going to look at each and every performer who has ever stepped foot in the Royal Rumble and evaluate not only their individual performances, but the cumulative value of their contributions to the event. So, starting in 1988, we'll profile every competitor that has entered the Rumble in the order they entered. And we're going to be going through all their years at once. And I think, what do you think about our competitor tonight, JT?
I'm glad we started with him because I didn't want to start with someone who's not great. He's obviously a legend in the WWF and in the wrestling business. And I don't know if he's someone that jumps to your mind initially as like a Royal Rumble stalwart, but then when you break it down, he's had a lot of great Rumble appearances. So I think it's a good way to start. And I also think it's a really cool concept, and, you know, full credit where it's due, Aaron, this was your idea. And it's enticing to me because I don't think it's really ever been done. Not that I'm aware of, anyway, to look at it this way. There's been breakdowns of the Royal Rumbles and Royal Rumble matches, but I don't think it's ever really been done where you've looked at a particular competitor and how they work in Royal Rumble matches.
Yeah.
Good.
I was just going to say, I really appreciated that you're on board, because when we had the original board meeting at the North South Connection, I believe this was called the stupidest idea someone had ever heard before.
Yeah, someone. Down the south of the North South Connection,
the Southern Grinch. But I think it's going to be fun. Go on with what you were saying before. So.
I don't remember, but you know, just to reiterate what you may have heard, if you are a listener, No Holds Barred, and thinking, wow, these guys are doing another show. But we are cutting back No Holds Barred to just two a month. We have a couple of cool concepts that are going to rotate, so that'll be every other Saturday on North South, and this will air every other Monday, rotating with the wonderful Year That Was podcast that you do. So excited about it. And I think it's a good way to kick off the new year. We wanted some fresh content. And everyone loves the Royal Rumble, so it's a good time of the year to start it, obviously. And it's a great wrestler to start it with. Now, we're going to do things a little bit of formatics, as some may say. We're going to talk about year by year, like you said, Aaron. So, you know, Bret the Hitman Hart was starting off with. He was in – how many was he in? Six Rumbles?
Five Rumbles,
of course. So we're going to go year by year, and we have a few categories that we're going to break down and score each appearance in for everyone. So we're going to do presentation, which is, I guess, like kind of how they're presented within the match. Are they presented as a threat? Are they presented as a stalwart? Are they presented as a jobber? Like, you know, how are they utilized in the match by the booking and the setup? Then there's creativity, which is their creativity within the concept of the match. So how do they work in the match? Do they do different stuff? Are they just resting on the ropes? Are they trying different moves? Are they teaming with different guys? You know, just kind of the flow there.
Think work rate.
And then finally is basically the work rate of the Rumble. And finally is effectiveness. So do they eliminate a bunch of guys? And if they weren't a big eliminator, were they someone that helped navigate the match? Were they looked at as a lead in the match? You know, so basically, how effective were they? If they didn't exist in the match, if you slotted in Virgil for them, like, would it have mattered? You know, and that's legit for some guys in here. So that stands tall for a lot of these dudes. Like, if there wasn't them in this spot, or if this slot never existed in this Rumble, would it have been as effective? So we'll tally those grades. That will help us determine the all-time straight ranking of Royal Rumble performances. Then we're going to aggregate those grades to rank the performer overall amongst his peers as a Rumble competitor. So
we're basically going – we're going to find out what the second best Royal Rumble performance of all time is.
Right.
Essentially.
Right.
And we'll also be keeping track of things like cumulative time they've been in the ring, the amount of eliminations, and try to just kind of track their overall the little quirky things that like follow them rumble to rumble. Like, I'm sure when we talk about Tito Santana, we're going to talk about his never-ending feud with Rick Martel kind of thing.
Yep, exactly. All right, so Bret Hart, 1988, Aaron. We'll start off. So if you didn't get the gist of the order we're going in, we're going to do every one in order that was in 1988. And we'll do all theirs, right? So Bret Hart was number one. Number two, Tito Santana will be next episode. You know, and we might do more than one guy per episode, depending on the volume of Rumbles they're in.
We will certainly
Brett
do.
Brett was obviously, more than one yes, guy. Which Reed will not have his own episode. But Bret Hart obviously had a lot to discuss, so he was going to stand alone. Once we exhaust 88, we'll move to 89. Whoever we hadn't talked about will be up next, right? So and then we'll just keep going for as long as we can survive doing this project.
And it's shocking how fast Shawn Michaels comes up in this.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's going to be a big, long research project. Because, like, if you guys don't know, this forces us to watch, like, every single minute they're in the Rumble over and over again.
Yes.
So,
I've already watched 1988, like, six times.
Yeah, and it's not a great Rumble. So, 98, Bret Hart coming in, like, where's he at in the card? Like, what does he have going on? What are his feuds?
So, they would have just... but they weren't faced yet, right? They were kind of toward the end of the heel run. I don't know if they had a feud per se. They had lost the titles to Strikeforce in October. I guess they were just kind of still meandering with that. They were kind of ensconced in the Savage Honky stuff, right?
Right.
They were, you know, working with Jimmy Hart and the Honky Tonk Man to fuck with Savage and Elizabeth. So they're kind of just like the cronies of the Hart family at this point. Mm-hmm. Still title contenders, but you know, they're not long for the heel side of the roster at this point. You could always see, I mean, 88 was like the first time, too, that you heard the rumors of potential Bret Hart solo run. So when you see stuff like this, you wonder, are they starting to sniff around a little bit?
Well, if you listen to Bret, there was a rumor of his solo run from 1984 on.
That's right. Yeah. So the cowboy.
Yeah, I was supposed to be a cowboy. So he comes in at number one. So fun little fact, he's the first entrant ever in the Royal Rumble.
Mm-hmm.
He's also all in pink, so he's extremely shiny.
Very,
very shiny.
I like. And it's clear he'll be looked at as a workhorse too, right out of the gate.
Oh, like, yeah.
He's a good choice at number one. They obviously wanted someone who could help pace the match, work the match as kind of the key man to work around in the beginning portion to get everything, you know, across to the viewer.
Right. I do think too, something that might be fun to track is if these competitors, when do they actually start going out every man for himself?
Yeah, it does not happen in 1988, that's for sure.
No, because the guys Bret fights are all like, I mean, he's obviously in there for Tito Santana. He fights Jake. He fights Jim Brunzel, Don Morocco, Jim Duggan a bit, Sam Houston, and B. Brian Blair. So you can see he's kind of still sticking around the tag division. But then again, this whole match is the tag division. So I guess that's just the consequence of it, right?
Yeah, right. It's definitely a heavy chunk of it. But also what drives that is Jesse on commentary, who's, you know, always great. But he is, like, obsessed with calling sides in this thing. So if, like, you know, if it's the Hart Foundation double-teaming Tito and they're the only three in the ring and out comes another face, he's like, oh, the sides are even. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
He's very much calling it down partisan lines as he's calling the match. And he says it, like, every entrant. He's like, oh, here comes help for so-and-so. Like, it's never even a thought that the heels may fight the heels and the faces may fight the faces in his mind. It's very heel-face-driven in 88. I don't think we get much crossover at all.
It's as far removed from Vince McMahon saying good guys and bad guys as you could possibly be.
Yep.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting that his main focus in this match the whole time he's in is Tito Santana.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes sense because that's kind of, Strikeforce took the titles from them, what, like 2 months before this?
October, yeah, I believe.
So, yeah, 2 months, three months before this. So, yeah, the feud is still kind of brewing. I like that his first alliance in the match is with Butch Reed.
Yes.
I do find the colors of their costumes, like, way too clashy for me. But aside from that...
What did Butch have on, the blue in this one?
Red. He's wearing the red. And it's not a good look from Butch Reed. And then as soon as Neidhart gets in there, they all just triple-team Santana, which is really nice.
Yep. And a benefit of Bret being number one in this match is he gets to do some variant offense, too, not just the standard Battle Royal stuff out of the gate. So you almost get like a match with him and Tito to open things up, which is a nice way. You know, they're not just trying to toss each other. They're actually working a match a little bit.
See, I think that's a blessing and a curse because, yes, it is different, but it does take a little bit away from the fact that they're not trying to win the match, unless you want to make the argument that like he's trying to weaken him.
Yeah, he's gonna wear him down a little bit. He's not gonna throw him out probably that quick. Not a guy like Tito. So
yeah, Tito's cool in this match. We'll talk about him next time. And I think what's cool about how Brett's presented is as the match goes on, Jesse and Vince really do a great job of putting him over as the Iron Man.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, he has definitely played up that well, hyped up that well. And he felt like the ringleader too of the heels, which also makes him feel like a big deal. So not only the Iron Man, but also when it's like him, Anvil, and Butch beating on Tito, it definitely feels like he's the one calling the shots. Like he's the lead guy with the heavies doing his dirty work. And, you know, I thought that was a fun segment. And then when Jake comes in next and it's the Hards versus Tito and Jake, like that's an awesome tag match right there. Like,
oh, yeah.
A lot of fun with Brett bumping all around.
Tito and Jake would have been an awesome team. I think you can get a good grasp of the presentation of the guys, too, by how often the announcers talk about them. And Brett gets a good amount of talking in this. Like, Vince is constantly talking about how Brett has sustained a tremendous amount of punishment. And, like, I think he does a good job selling that he's as tough as nails also.
Yep. Not nails, a wrestler, because he wasn't around yet.
No, and he wasn't actually that tough. Nails,
but, yeah. Yeah, I guess he did pick on a man a quarter his size.
An old man, right? I'm
not feeble.
Are you kidding me, pal? I think as a whole, I think Bret Hart's presented well in this. Like, I think he's the Iron Man, like constantly on the verge of being eliminated or cheating with other heels. I think that's kind of what he is in this match.
Yeah, and I think he plays it well. And you get all the teamwork with Anvil. He's like the glue early on for sure.
Yeah.
And he does a nice job between selling the exhaustion of being number one and not just hanging on to the rope. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which will become a trope for some guys that we'll see as we go through this. I think he does a nice job of playing up that he gets more tired as the match goes on. But he's never really resting. He's constantly moving and doing something. And like you said, I mean, Jesse's just really putting him over heavy the whole match.
Yeah. He spends a lot of time in full Nelsons by various guys.
Yes.
Like waiting around for people to come and punch him. And he's also holding his face an awful lot. That's what I noticed in terms of his selling. A lot of face holding.
Punching the face quite a bit.
Did you – I enjoyed the Butch Reed missed knee lift that almost put Brett over the top. I think that was the first near elimination of in the history of the Rumble.
Yeah. No, that was a good one.
Yeah, he also gets a great pile driver on Tito, almost eliminated by Brunzell and Tito. And I don't know. I just think like he's not – We're not at the era yet where guys are doing these crazy near eliminations, right? It's just he's almost falling out, but it's not dramatic yet. But he's still doing them.
Right.
So I think like it's the first Rumble, so I don't know how he's good in it, but I don't think there's any license to be creative, and I think that's what kind of dings him a bit in this one for that kind of thing anyway.
Yeah, I guess I looked at it as I thought there was some creativity, even though we don't know the format quite yet. Like he was working beyond just the standard lean on the rope elimination battle royal stuff. Like he did a lot of offense. He had some standard wrestling stuff early on, the teamwork with the Anvil. He moved around a lot. He worked a lot of different guys. Like I thought he was active, and to me that in a situation like this, I gave him credit for that when he could have just kind of, you know, done a typical, you know, even though we haven't seen a Royal Rumble yet, we have seen battle royals, and that's usually a battle royal trope. Right. And he never lays back despite the duration. Like he's selling more and more the longer he lasts. And once Anvil's gone, he loses his support. He's taking a beating, but again, he's constantly moving, constantly involved.
Yeah.
I thought his elimination was a little tough. I'm sorry, do you have anything else to say?
No, go on. No, go on.
So Don Morocco throws him out and just kind of chucks him. Like that was one of the more disappointing parts of me that I felt very ho-hum. I don't think they had learned yet, really, the importance of what a good elimination could mean in these matches.
Right.
And I think it could have been a little bit more behind it if they would have really focused on like, what a moment that was after the long run he had that he finally gets thrown out. Instead, Morocco just dumps him like he's nothing. But I think he did a really good job driving the match. Like I think he was the centerpiece of the match. I think he was calling the shots and kind of keeping everything moving. And that's why they had him in that role. I think they kept him as the navigator of the match. It was hyped by Jesse and Vince. It was impressive. And it made sense that he was so worn down and he just got tossed if it had to be. But I thought he was the perfect first Iron Man, you know, and he gets credit for that too, and under presentation for me, being the Iron Man of the match. It was a great showing for him in 1988.
Yeah, he lasted 25 minutes and 42 seconds, and he and Neidhart eliminated Tito, so he had one elimination.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everything you said about the Iron Man is very apropos. I think he did a really good job. But I do think And this is what I struggled with, is I had some pretty high scores from him at first, but then as I was looking at his later rumbles, I was like, wow, that's way too close. So I think I had to kind of adjust. And I think this isn't the whole problem with me ranking things out of 10. But like, so what did you have for presentation out of 10?
So I was kind of high here. And looking at numbers, I think I'm just gonna, maybe my system's just going to be a little bit higher than yours. I did adjust down and up as well when I not actually was just to cheat a little bit. I went ahead on a couple guys as I was watching 88, and it's not as much the wasn't much him against himself. It was when I saw other guys, it made me move him up a little bit.
Right.
Once I started seeing other dudes and how they worked in the match. So I gave him a 5 for presentation. I thought it was strong. Yes, he didn't have a lot of eliminations, but he was the first Iron Man. He was the guy that drove the match. He got tons of hype, tons of commentary, and he was like kind of the star of the first half of the match. So to me, in the 1988 Royal Rumble, he's probably one of the top guy, like 3 as far as like utilization and presentation in that match.
Yeah, I agree with you. I just think I'm at a 3 because based on like where he's going to go, it just needs to be further away. Mm-hmm. For work rate, I'm a 2. And again, it's not I don't mean to say he's crap. It's just like, again, we're going to go further and further along this thing, and the 10s are going to be so vastly different that I think it needs to be far away from them.
Yeah, I went 4. Only cuz like I said earlier, I thought he worked aggressively. I think he was doing different stuff. He had the wrestling in the beginning. He never felt like a guy that was relying on the standard battle royal tropes to me. You know, he mixed it up. They did the double teams. So I thought he worked a different match than a standard Rumble match. So I give him a little bump there.
That's fair enough. And as effectiveness, I have him as a 3, simply because the lack of eliminations. He's the Iron Man, yes, but he didn't eliminate that many people. And in the end, his elimination didn't feel like a big deal. Plus, he didn't win. So that's where I'm at where I am. But again, I don't mean any of this as a slight. I think it's going to become clearer as we go on with the project.
So I originally was weighing eliminations in kind of heavily. And then I thought to myself, like, how many guys actually eliminate like multiple dudes? Like, I feel like in Rumble history, and this was anecdotal because I didn't do a ton of research behind it, just kind of going off my memory, I feel like most guys you get 1 to 2. Right. And then you get the Jesus push guys that get a bunch, and then you get some double ups. Like, there's not going to be that many that eliminate 5 guys in a Rumble. You know what I mean? Like, it's just not a thing. I don't think anyway. I mean, for his whole career, like his elimination, like there's not that many in 5 Rumbles. So it's just not his deal. But to me, that doesn't make him not effective. And the reason I bumped this up was, yes, the Iron Man, but also because of what I talked about. I thought he was really, really good in driving the match, and I think they put him in that role on purpose, and he effectively got this gimmick off the ground. It was a lot of pressure being the number one guy and going 20 minutes in this, and you know, he could have had an easy night like some of the other dudes, but he wasn't, and he drove the match. And I think that was a key, like it was effective to me, like that was something key that he played a big role in this match for.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I agree. I think that's why he's not at ones. Like, I agree that I don't think elimination necessarily matter, but I think it's a combination of a bunch of things, right? Mm-hmm. It's like eliminations matter to a degree, but so does if they win, if they last, like do they get more over in the match, right? Things like that. Right. Now, so that gives him a score of 22 out of 60 total with my points, your points together. So, you know, so far that's the number one performance.
Right.
We'll catch you next week, everybody. For 1990,
we're gonna do each match.
Yeah, like, do you think Brett gained anything from being in this match?
Oh, for sure. Like I said, I do think it was a bit of a test run. I do think they had plans in '88 to potentially have him go solo, and he does actually for the summer. So I think it was the goal of trying to establish him as a guy, even though he does team with Anvil quite a bit. Still is a guy that kind of can stand on his own. I love that he went number one because I think it showed a ton of faith in him and Tito to carry the early stages of this match. And the fact that it goes so long is back set up to me. So I think he gained some cred. I think he gained a lot of spotlight as a solo guy and a lot of positive commentary hype that maybe he wouldn't normally have gotten.
Yeah. Look, you know, after listening to you talk about the Iron Man next, I'm going to up his creativity to 3 instead of 2.
Okay.
So I think that's very true. Jared Robert chimed in on the Place to Be group. If you're on Facebook, check out the Place to Be discussion group. We got all kinds of cool stuff going on there. Lots of nice discussion. But we asked for some feedback on his runs. And Jared Robert in 1988 says, Brett becomes the first guy to establish a Royal Rumble Iron Man time. But it's broken the following year. Oh, spoilers. Can you believe he put spoilers in this?
What a son of a bitch.
Son of a bitch. Outside of that, there's nothing overly special about his performance here. Well, agree to disagree, Jared, I guess. But thanks for the feedback. So, look, let's move on to 1990.
I'm ready.
Okay. I wasn't sure. So, 1990, he's in a bit of a different place on the card when he goes into this thing, correct? Yeah.
Yeah. So, this is obviously 2 years later. They're kind of meandering a little bit, honestly. And you talked about it on the year that was when you did 1990, kind of the 2 year through line of the Hart Foundation and the tag team title picture, right?
Right.
They lose their title match at 88. They get a crack at the champs in non-title 89. Jesse says it might be a year. They lose that. And here we are. They're kind of aimless in the end 89 into early 90. They get the Bolsheviks at Mania before ramping back up to face Demolition and get a SummerSlam. So now they're kind of just a veteran face team that they hold the pops. Everyone likes them. They're great workers. They're a great team. But they're also really not, like, doing much of anything. So he does feel like more like just another guy in this match.
Right.
He comes in 8th and gets no eliminations and lasts 16 minutes.
Yeah.
Overall.
Now, he fights all the top heels in the match. He fights the Warlord. He fights Savage. He gets in a screaming match with Sensational Sherry. He spends a lot of time with Bad News. DiBiase, he even fights Andre, which is cool. And he tries to, most of this match is spent between him and Ted DiBiase. And I think it's a really interesting little foreshadowing of what you're going to get at Survivor Series 90 this year, where they end up going that like 10 minutes or 5 minutes after everybody else is eliminated in their elimination match.
And this is a loaded field, especially early
in the
match. So him coming in, him getting to come in now versus like Anvil comes in later. Yeah. And not that that wasn't heavily built up later either. I mean, there's some stars there, obviously, at the end. But early on, there's such a loaded feel. Like Brett comes in and Savage, Piper, Jake, and DiBiase are all there. I mean, just like insane that he's just in there with all those guys. And he weaves right in. Like he doesn't feel out of place at all coming in with those guys. Obviously, we have the benefit of hindsight, right? We know what he becomes. But even, even in that moment, he didn't feel outclassed, and he's aggressive out of the gate. Whoever comes at him or who comes near him, he's just going at him with strikes. And then he kind of works with Piper. You know, it seems like he kind of has a friend in there. So they work together quite a bit throughout there. And it feels like, he belongs more than, the Warlord level guys that are in there. Like he feels more on that upper echelon versus that level. And you would think maybe he'd feel more like the Warlord level because they're in the tag division and everything else. But he feels like he's more above the tag stuff.
Well, he gets a very high-pitched pop when he makes his entrance. Mm-hmm. That's all the women in the crowd screaming when he comes in. I agree that he doesn't look out of place, but he also doesn't look, for me, he doesn't look up to par with the people that are in there. And it's no fault of his.
Right.
It's just he's in there with the megastars.
Right.
Like, I think he's not as over as the guys he's in with. Like, he'll get the pop and the girls will scream for him, but it's not the same visceral reaction. And the other bit of a trouble I have with him here is I find the announcers barely talk about him the whole match.
Yeah, I mean, there's just so much else going on, and he just doesn't have, he's not going to get the spotlight he had in 88, and he's just not a focal point right now. The company is what it is.
Yeah.
They're not going to spend calories, talking about him. It's just what it is. And also, he doesn't get as much solo shine because the ring is more full than it was in 88. So he's doing more kind of standard battle royal type stuff. And he's not getting that shine in the middle of the ring like he did last time.
No. I mean, they don't even mention when he gets eliminated. It's because Demolition's working on – I mean, it's not his fault. It's like Demolition's working on Andre, which is a big deal. But I think all that together is why I don't think it grew – from the presentation the year before, in 88, which is why I went 3 out of 10 on presentation.
Yeah, there were a couple of things I liked. Like, I liked him and Bad News going at it, kind of reignited their old feud.
Yeah,
Stampede. I liked the moment with Andre choking him, like, and him spending that time bumping for Andre.
Yeah.
Something you don't get. And he kind of kept Andre busy till Demolition came in, because that was Andre's big moment. And he kind of eats up some time for him.
Mm-hmm.
He definitely sells a lot in this one. I like the moment, of course, where he headbutts Haku and kind of hurts himself. But again, like you said, not a lot of talk.
I think that's my favorite spot that he does is when he headbutts Haku.
Yes, and then just kind of rattles his own head. Yeah. But it was odd. He got tossed by Dusty Rhodes, which is just weird in of itself. And then they don't see it, and then they don't even talk about it.
No.
Like Andre gets thrown out, and then a minute or two later, like, oh, Bret Hart went out as well during that. But I think, you know, it was a long showcase. He got a lot of FaceTime. It just wasn't much focus on that FaceTime. He felt more of a player up the ladder a little bit, but also not as much shine as he got the year before. So all that said, I went 4 for presentation. So I took him down a notch from where I had last time. But again, I gave him some credit for being in there with the big boys and feeling like he could hang. Like, they obviously gave him that spot for a reason.
Yeah, like when I'm at 3, I don't think it's garbage. I just think, no. You know, it's just not focused. The focus just isn't there. I get the impression that all the heels want to work with him as a face watching this match. Everybody goes right after him. They all love it. There's actually one point, though, where, like, he's just kind of standing in the ring with nothing to do. And he just stands there with his arms on his hips for, like, 3-4 seconds because everybody's paired off except him. And I thought that was a nice metaphor for his run in this one.
Yep.
Like, he's like, he's good, he fits, but as soon as everything gets intense, he's just right. A little out of place.
Yeah, he's gonna go dance partner.
Yeah, that's it. I love that. I love that headbutt spot so much. I thought his work though was good, but a bit more standard fare and not as interesting as the year before, which is why I went 2 out of 10 for work rate and creativity.
Yeah, I went with a 3. So again, a step down from last year. You know, I think I just tried to leave some room below him because even at his worst, like, he still works a creative style.
Right.
Like, it's never lazy or behind like other guys would. So I didn't want to go too low because I wanted to leave some space, but yeah. It definitely was a step behind a year ago for me.
Yeah, me too. And you mentioned he was eliminated by Dusty. He lasted 16-16, zero eliminations. And also the elimination for Dusty was really weak. He just kind of like turned around and hit him with his elbow and Bret fell out of the ring, which I thought was a bit like...
Yeah.
A bit odd. I thought his general story of the match was like he was basically a mid-card guy entering the Rumble and eliminated after 16 minutes. And while he did some solid work, it was all a bit nondescript.
Yeah, that's why for effectiveness I went 2, which was a pretty big drop from what I had him last time. He just really didn't do it much. I mean, just he wasn't non-effective. Like, he wasn't worthless. So, like, I think if he had someone else in his role, you probably get a little bit of a dip, only because you get those cool moments. Someone else probably doesn't do that Haku spot. Someone else doesn't stooge for Andre as well. So, like, there's some cool stuff he does that no one else could. So I didn't want to completely dog him. But he has no eliminations. He's not really much of an Iron Man. He just goes 16 minutes, which, you know, I guess in theory is half the, you know, whatever, a quarter of the Rumble time.
Sure,
so,
yeah.
Like, that's not terrible. So I didn't want to completely bag on him. But that gives me a total of 9. You a total of 7.
So 16 out of 60.
Yeah, so clearly likely to be the worst of the Bret Hart bunch.
And it's interesting that in this Rumble that is so good,
yeah,
he kind of comes up a bit short.
Yeah, I just say it's so loaded and he's just not at that level yet.
No.
If, you know, he's not in like a year like 92, which is super loaded, but I think you put him in that field and he feels much more like a player, you know what I mean?
Oh, in 92?
Yeah, if he was in 92.
Yeah, he'd feel on par. Because he's on par with Piper in 92, I think. Piper's maybe a bit bigger star, but not far behind. He's high, right. He's bigger than Davey, and Davey is a big part of that match.
Yeah.
I also think that he probably got less out of this match than he did the 88 one.
Yeah, the 88 one, he got the shine. He got the, you know, the respect of being number one and driving the match and everything else. And here he just... Right. I mean, again, he could have just been in the undercard and it wouldn't have made much of a difference for his career.
Yeah. Well, look, Jared Robert hitting us again, 1990. As great as this Rumble is, this may be Bret's least memorable outing. I feel like he's just writing my thoughts. It's not a bad performance or anything, but the fact that his elimination is at the hands of Dusty Rhodes, isn't even really caught on camera, shows where he was in the depth chart of this Rumble at the time. Yeah, bang on. Bang on.
Yep.
Hang on. All right, 91. So 91... He's coming in here as he's the tag champion, right?
He's tag champion, and this time you know for sure.
Yeah,
like this is the year they're gonna do something with him. Like in 1991, like it's obvious they have plans for this guy. So this is really kind of the initial. Even though he's tag champion, it feels more like this is kind of the jump start of his solo run. This match.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I mean, they put him in number one, and he was the first person to be number one. He's also the first person to be number one 2 times.
And it's twice in 4 years, right? So he's going to steer the match again. And it, like, when I think of this match, I don't even think of him as being in a tag team and tag champions. Like I initially think of him as just like, all right, this is 91 IC level Bret Hart.
Yeah, it makes sense. Like I think you're right that he has to steer it, but not as much as he had to steer it in 88.
No, not as much. But again, usually the guy that comes in one, unless it's someone that's, you know, just in there and they're going to get tossed. Like if it's anyone that comes in number one and lasts, usually they do kind of drive a bunch of the match. Like,
yeah,
so like, you know, even 90, you think of DiBiase, like when the guy comes in one and he's in there for a while, it's usually the match kind of tells a story around him.
Yeah.
Rarely does a guy come in number one, last 20 minutes and like you don't hear about him.
And they trust him to start number one with Dino fucking Bravo at number two.
Right. And then, you know, in Valentine, who I love, but
yeah,
like he's, you know, hitting the back 18, back 18,
in the
at
back
this point,
three.
Right. I mean, he's like, you know, he's on the end. So like, they're not exactly, and then Roma, like, you know, they're not exactly throwing a murderer's row in there.
No.
They're letting him be the stud of the match early on.
Now, this is the first match where I think it is a bit like that I've seen with Bret anyway, that's a little bit every man for himself, because he fights Saba Simba. He fights the Texas Tornado. He fights Butch. Right. You know, he does the usual heels like Hercules, and he gets Martel for a while. But there's some good mix up between the heels and the faces here, which I like. I think that really helps sell the concept. And I wonder how much of that is started by Demolition in 89.
Yeah. By 89, they're already into the every man for himself stuff. I mean, you know, and then it creeps in more and more, I think. Once they realized probably 88 was too heavy with the face heel and they wanted to get over the concept on pay-per-view, I think they definitely drive that home more.
Right.
A lot of talk here, too, that we haven't gotten too much. We got a little bit because of DiBiase buying the number and everything. But Gorilla, like, really harps on the lousy luck. Lousy luck for Bret. Early draws are shit. No one's going to last. Like, they're really hyping it up a lot this time.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's cool. And it's interesting because they're hyping it up this time, but this is the Royal Rumble where you have three – basically, I mean, if you want to count Bret as an Iron Man, I think you can because in 20 minutes. But, like, you also get Valentine and Martel, right? So they're hyping up the early number.
And look at all the times. Hercules, yeah. Tito Santana, Shane Douglas. They all are, like, 20-plus minutes. This has to be the Rumble with, like, the most guys going the longest in it.
Well,
it's, like, crazy the guys that hang in this match.
Yeah, and it actually does hurt the match because there's too many times where there's too many guys in the ring. It's interesting that Bret's main adversary seems to be Greg Valentine in this match. I don't recall them having that much beef before. I guess it's like a holdover from the Rhythm and Blues Heart Foundation shit.
Yeah, which had just happened not that long ago. I mean, they kind of feuded in the fall of 90.
Yeah.
So it was lingering a bit. I think it's just because he just happened to – I think that it's paired off because they were the two of the first three guys in. Bravo went out, and – they just kind of always gravitated back to each other. I think it was just kind of a natural flow. But it was a lot of them working through stuff. And Bret, I thought, was definitely a little less unique, a little less creative in this one. He does mix in some of standard offense, and he feels like the focal point for a lot of this, at least early on. Does a lot of his selling. He's worn down. He's not staying there. He's a workhorse again. It's just that I didn't feel like as much stood out again. Like, I thought more stood out in 88 with his work.
I don't know. What I liked is, I liked that he was trying to eliminate people more often, which I think, makes sense within the context of the match. I love that, Valentine gets distracted with Jimmy Hart and Bret plays possum to hit like a weird, like kind of almost inverted DDT. Like, I thought there was a little bit more juice to his work, this time, even though there wasn't really any memorable spots. I find the most memorable spot, is when like Jake saves him and then they have like this like quiet moment of like friendship where Jake just kind of points at him. I thought that was kind of cool. Like going back to 88 when they helped each other in that original match. Right.
And everything in him is crisp as usual too. Like his offense is always snap. It's tight. And you can kind of hear it wherever he is in the ring. Like you kind of hear him unloading on guys in the corner, even when there's a bunch of dudes in there. He had some interesting teases too. Like he'd end up in weird positions, like kind of sitting in the corner and different stuff like that. So that was cool. I like the one where that funny bit where he does survive and he's sitting on the top rope and he kind of wipes his brow with relief.
Yeah.
That he hung on. Like that was kind of neat. Showed a little personality. And then he does end up eventually getting thrown out by the Undertaker, which really is no shame at all. I mean, this, you know, we kind of groused over his previous two eliminations that felt kind of like nothing. This one felt well more earned. I mean, Undertaker is getting a monster push out of the gate and he cleans house here. And, you know, him coming in and ending Bret's night was not any bad shake for Bret at all. He had a great showing. He stirred the first third of the match. was a steady force, and he kept the crowd hooked and moving along. So I thought overall it was another strong showing for him.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the connection he had with the crowd in this one was very different than the previous two we've talked about, because the crowd is popping on all of his escapes, whereas they weren't in the past. And more to what you said about The Undertaker, he's coming in as the heel who's going to clear the ring, but he has to clear out people that the fans are invested in for this to mean anything. And I think it makes sense that he does Bret here. So it's actually a meaningful elimination that happens.
Yep, agreed.
Yeah. I think it just hurts a bit that he's not really in feuds with anything, but he's just a real workhorse here. He lasts 20 minutes and 23 seconds before elimination. And the Undertaker elimination is cool, too, because he like picks him up in the double choke and just throws him out of the ring. So it looked brutal, too.
Yeah, it was a great elimination.
Yeah. He didn't eliminate anybody. Which is a bit of a shame. And I thought he told a good story in the match. Like he's a good upstart, but still just a bit behind hanging with the big boys. I don't mean in terms of overness. I mean in terms of, say, kayfabe. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yep.
Yeah. So look, I had presentation 4, creativity 4, effectiveness 3.
So I went presentation 5. I've had on par with 88. I think it felt about the same to me as far as being presented and the talk and the focus. Creativity 3. I didn't think he was as creative as he was in 88 and about the same as the year before. I thought he worked a lot more basic of a match. And effectiveness, I went 3. So I did take this a step back. No eliminations. A little bit shorter than he was in 88. Less chunk of the match. To your point earlier, he didn't drive this one as much as he did. You know, could Tito or someone have been in his spot in this year and made much of a difference? Probably would have felt the same. I do think he benefits, though. I do think this felt like the first step of his singles run. So I do think that's a big point there. So all in, Aaron, we both went 11. So that's 22, which has it in second place behind 88 right now for his best performance.
Yeah. Yeah, 90's rough. Jared's still hitting us, 1991. Jared, I really appreciate all your comments. And for the guys we're going to put up, guys, hit us up. We'll make sure everything gets on because I think it's a really cool aspect of the show that can go forward. Jared says, 1991, definitely a more memorable performance than 1990. Yes. Again, we're just on point with her. I didn't actually take notes. I just read what Robert said and based my notes around it. It helps that Bret enters number one and is eliminated by The Undertaker in memorable fashion. Bret definitely shines more than he did in 1990, but doesn't eliminate anyone, and his Rumble time is just over 20 minutes. But, you know, 20 minutes is okay. Like, it's fine. Like, for a guy in his position, I think it's quite good because the other guys that are – I guess – I don't know why they made Valentine an Iron Man in this one, like, just to throw him out. But, like,
right.
Martel, who's the Iron Man, is involved in a major, major feud. So – I don't know. That all makes sense to me.
Yep. Agreed.
94. Look, now we're in a really different place with Bret here.
Oh, extremely. I mean, he's the top star.
He's top star in the company, right? He'd gotten beat up earlier in the night by Owen. and he was trying to win back his belt. So that's and here we're finally also, I mean, it does matter. We're in the era where the winner gets a title shot at WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Comes in at 27. And were you at this show, right?
I was.
So when someone didn't come out earlier in the night, did you buy that it was Bret?
Yeah, it was real hard to track. Like being alive, we didn't have the best seats. We were kind of far up. Mm-hmm. It was hard to keep track of who had come in and who hadn't. So it's like we had a tick sheet to say, oh, here's who, you know. So, yeah, I think we just assumed. And I don't think it would have been that crazy. It wasn't like we were taking a huge leap of faith to assume he was the one that didn't show up after the injury angle. I think it was common belief that Luger was going to win the Rumble anyway, like, and get his title shot after he didn't win at SummerSlam. Like, everything was pointing that way. So I think it was a really good swerve, actually, because it really did feel pretty natural that, okay, it just wouldn't be him.
Yeah.
Luger's going to win, and then Bret and Owen will feud. So that's, like, everything felt like it was pointing that way for sure.
Yeah, I buy it. I bought it at home watching it, you know, like, I don't know. I think it's a nice touch.
Right.
I think what's really interesting, there's a lot of interesting about this run, but I think it's the real, I mean, we saw it earlier, but I really like the interplay between Bret and Shawn Michaels in this match.
Mm-hmm.
They spend a lot of time together and their chemistry is really good here.
Yep. Yep. And they cross paths multiple times already, right? Yeah. In their run. So they definitely have some familiarity. Rockers Hearts and then Bret and Shawn in 92 cross paths. So like they obviously have already worked a bunch together and it did feel like two guys really started to take the leap you know, Brett a little ahead of Sean probably, but yeah, it definitely felt like two guys that were hitting that next level together. Brett gets a huge pop when he hobbles out.
Oh, yeah. I
mean, Providence is a Brett town, so, like, not a shock. And he takes a big beating right away. Vince calls it out. He's like, I don't know how much he's going to be able to do in this match.
Right.
And DiBiase calls him stupid. He's like, stupid to be in there.
Yeah.
Like, why would he even risk this? And he sells the knee the whole time. And everyone targets it, which felt fresh because we haven't seen that a lot in Rumbles, where we have a guy with a known injury and everyone's going at it. So that was, like, really cool to see that play out. You know, you get guys on the verge of elimination, and then he get kicked in the knee. You know, so it was, like, it was a cool way to go about it.
Well, they all saw him get his leg kicked out from under his leg.
Obviously, just hours before.
Yeah, he ties it up with Crush. He fights Tenryu, even though Tenryu's the fucking... when we get to Tenryu, I'm going to have some words about Tenryu. Yes. I like that he has a bit with Bam Bam. He fights Sparky Plug, of all people. Fatu. He fucking stiffs the shit out of Mo in a headlock with a punch. It looks awesome. Atom Bomb. So it's a nice little mix of guys he kind of squares off with. And I love, too, that even though DiBiase is calling him stupid... he's still putting him over the whole time. It's not.
Oh, he's giving him a lot of credit. Like, he may be dumb, but, you know, he's showing a lot of heart, like stuff like that.
Yeah, Bret Hart is taking a beating. Like, it's all of that stuff. So for me, this is the strongest he's presented in the Rumble, because he's presented as, like, the bravest man in the world. He's the top star in the company. It felt like a different guy than the previous iterations too. The storyline of him being injured, everything just kind of came together here. And look, this is my highest score for Brett across anything, but I have him rated 8 out of 10 for presentation here.
Yeah, I mean, he was great. I do like how he tussles with Bigelow too, like his old nemesis. Like,
yeah.
So that was cool touch. I love when he goes right at Adam Bomb, and that shocks Vince that he showed the guts to go right at Adam Bomb while he's banged up and Bomb was fresh. So that was a cool call out. And Brett felt like the top guy even more than Luger here.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They tried to do the injury at Luger too, right? Having Tenryu and Kabuki beat him up before, and they tried to make it like they were on the same playing level, but it didn't feel that way at all. Like, Brett just completely overshadowed Luger during the stretch. They do get to work together a little bit down the stretch as well, which is cool. I love the double elimination with Fatu and Michaels.
Yep.
To set them up as the last two. And I love the hot finish. I mean,
awesome.
Brett finds his reservoir of energy. He's unloading with a wild flurry and then into the tie. And it was different and creative. I mean, I get why they did it. In the moment, it feels deflating and it sacrificed a bit. I do wonder if they should have just declared one of them the winner and then Dusty finished it on Raw and had Tunney say, you know what, we reviewed the footage and it wasn't a tie. So, like, maybe make a call just to send, like, everyone home, okay?
Yeah.
You know, and say, we're going to look, it was close. You know, Vince can even say, like, all right, the ref here is going to overrule. He's going to say Luger hit first. Luger wins. But Jack Tunney has already told us, like, he's going to review the tape. And there's a chance, like, something could change. We'll talk to you tomorrow night on Raw. So, like, that might have, looking back, I think might have worked a little bit better to keep the pop, because it does kind of kill the flow those last 5 minutes. But, yeah, he's presented as a star. He's selling like a warrior, firing up when needed. I easily his best Rumble showing.
Oh, yeah.
And
the fact –
so this was funny. Yeah, go
ahead. I was just going to say, the fact that they nailed that fall out of the ring so perfectly, I'm going to credit Brett with that in terms of work rate, because I think – that could have gone a million different ways wrong, and it really looks perfect. I mean, maybe they could have, maybe because I've only ever seen it on camera, it was hidden somehow, but it really looked great.
Agreed. It's funny, I had him at 6 in presentation, which is just one above last year, which feels off to me. So I'm going to bump it to 7 as we talk. I don't think I gave enough credit for how much it made him feel like just a warrior in there. I went 6 for creativity.
Yep.
I went
6 too.
6 for effectiveness. He eliminates 2 guys, or 3. What do we have?
4.
3. 4, yeah, okay. Crush, Sparky, Tenryu, Fatu. 15 minutes. Yeah, so, I mean, he doesn't fully win the match. Yeah, I'm going to bump it, too. I'm going to go 7.
Yeah.
I'm with you. Okay.
It's hard. It's hard.
I think I, like, over-calibrated this one because I was afraid that being there live and how much I love it.
No, but it's cool because, like, look – look, no, not only does he win the match, but, like, he I feel he comes out even stronger because of the gutsy performance, right? And he eliminates more guys than he ever has, and he's the most over, and he, like, there's just a lot of positives in this thing for him.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it definitely, it also, the biggest thing to me is that it makes them pick him over Luger, and that's it. like he basically tanked Luger's career with this, the way they did it. And that's the most effective thing that could have happened for him, because, you know, up until a certain point, Luger was winning that belt at Mania.
Yeah, for sure.
And after this, he wasn't.
Well, after Brett fights those incredible odds with the injury and toughs it out, and like Luger was dead. It wasn't like Luger couldn't have done anything to save this. It was too great a performance from Brett.
Yeah, agreed.
I also love that just a little moment where like right before he comes out, there's like he doesn't come out right on time. Like there's a little hesitation before he comes out. Everyone else, the buzzer hits and then they come out, right? The buzzer hits. It's like a little bit of suspense, and I love it. Look, let's go.
I think it's an underrated Rumble, and I think it's because of the Undertaker Yoko stuff and the tie, like sticks in people's minds. But I think it's a very underrated Rumble show and match. I really do. Like I think the match is great. I don't think it gets looked at as much as it should as like one of the best Rumbles of that era.
See, when did I have it? I had it 10th. When I ranked all the Rumbles.
Yeah, I think that feels good. Like, 10th all the time. I don't think most people would think of it as a top 10 Rumble.
Yeah, it's great. Like, it's really – yeah, it's really great. And I mean, like, we're talking about Brett here, but there's a lot of good performances. Michaels is really good in this match, too. I think Michaels is like
Diesel. Saves his career and launches the Diesel push.
Yeah.
The idea of the concept of the Jesus push here. And guys have good – like, Bigelow gets a long stretch. As well. Like, he has a really good showing in there. So, Adam Bomb's the only one who looks like a scrub.
Right. Well,
DiBiase shits all over him. It's embarrassing to come out that late and get thrown out that quickly.
Well, Vince Garand, Adam Bomb is going to win the Royal Rumble. I don't think he'd ever said that about anybody. Ryan Gray talks about Bret Hart's walk to the ring. That goddamn walk to the ring in 94 may still be going on.
Selling, baby.
Yeah, he's selling, baby. Jared Robert, 1994. Brett draws a late number here and makes a dramatic entrance to a massive pop. Yes. Unlike his previous Rumble appearances, Hart is definitely a top guy here, and it's amazing how his status skyrocketed since his last appearance just 3 years ago. The late number drawing here suits the storyline of him injuring his knee. It was also high time having Brett get the luck of the draw, which you talked about earlier, after previously drawing numbers in the first third of the match. It's probably his best performance in a Rumble up to that point. Never cared for him having to co-win it with Lex Luger, whom Vince was still trying to shove down the fans' throats here. The ship had already sailed on Luger's push by this point. It is funny, eh? Like, I don't think I ever minded the tie. Ever. Like, and I think it just adds to Brett's win when he finally wins it.
Yeah, I think in the moment it did feel like... Ties always suck. I mean, you know, you're a hockey guy, right? I mean, no one wants a tie. That's why they changed the rule.
Got rid of that.
So it's like in the moment, especially if you put it in like the Providence, like we had never got a pay-per-view. It's a rare thing.
Right.
We go out there. It's a Royal Rumble and the night ends in a tie. It's not even like the tie was in the middle of the card. Like the night literally ended. You're walking out of there with no winner. Like it kind of felt a little bit of deflating.
And you had to watch The Undertaker die.
I mean, look, it is kind of a dark pay-per-view. Like overall, like it's kind of a deflating show. Even the Rumble itself is very heel dominated. Like the big heels throw out all the faces they're feuding with. Like Bigelow throws out Doink, Crush throws out Savage. You know, like it's very outside of, you know, two faces obviously winning, but even the tie, it's a very tough pay-per-view as far as like feel good. Brett and Owen, like Brett getting hurt and Owen turning on him. Like there's a lot of darkness all throughout the show to set up Mania. So, but that said, it's still in retrospect it's part of a larger story. It ends up looking okay to me. But in the moment, you could understand why there was some feel of disappointment.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. All right. One left. 97. Again, Brett is like the top star in the company. Would you say he's the favorite to win this Rumble going in?
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. But this was a fun time because there was a lot of ambiguity on top of the card.
Could have been anybody. Yeah.
Sid is champion and him and Shawn Michaels are battling. But Undertaker, Austin... Brett, like they've all been in the world title mix. You got Vader lingering too. Like, so there are guys that are, you know, all being positioned as legit players and title contenders battling for top spot. So I think you could have sold like Taker, Brett, Austin, all in outside chance Vader, like all potential winners of this Rumble. So I think he was probably the favorite, but I would say like Taker and Austin are probably like right on his ass as favorites.
Right. Yeah, I buy it. And he comes out at 21, which is a late number. And his entrance and the reaction to his entrance is almost as good as anything he does in the match.
Yeah, yeah. It's an all-timer. And his character is great here too, right? Because he's kind of the tipping point where he's trying to hang on to the old days. He's been passed by during his layoff. And, you know, it was starting in early 96 with Shawn, and now he comes back to this landscape where Steve Austin is catching fire as, like, this asshole. And he's, like, coming back and just trying to be the old Bret Hart, and the fans aren't having it, and he's kind of getting screwed, and he's pissed. We've already had where, you know, it ends up being the next night where he quits, right, and all that. So he's getting to the point now where it's, like, he's super frustrated, and that bleeds in this match where it almost feels like he's wrestling it at a pace of desperation.
Yeah, look, frustrated isn't the goddamn word. This is bullshit, all right?
You just hit Pat Patterson, that goddamn son of a bitch.
I love right away, too, that, like, as soon as he comes in, it's a fight. Like, he's fighting Austin. And he beats the shit out of Austin and puts him in the sharpshooter right away. Like, just goes right to his hated rival. He's got that really – he's got the spot with Lawler, which, I mean, is kind of dumb, I guess. But it's funny. Like, it's silly.
Yeah.
Like, and, like, JR and Vince are really putting them over as, like, Bulldogs, Bret and Austin – and Lawler's just like, I think it's going to be Bret if it comes down to Bret and Austin. So, like, even at this point, the announcers, even the ones that hate him, are treating him like the perennial favorite.
Right. And there's such a cool moment. After the formula, you kind of get the usual strikes and teases. A lot of the history passing, when you look at the guys that are in there toward the end, it's Hart, Austin, Terry Funk, The Rock, and, you know, Glenn Jacobs, right? It's Diesel.
Yeah.
And then I think Foley. Is he in there late? He's in there late. So, like,
Undertaker too.
And Taker, yeah, it's such a neat cross section of stars that's overlooked, because this Rumble is a little light at times too, just due to the roster. But God, at the end, like, they really load everyone up toward the end, and it's just a bunch of stars. And Vader, like, it's just a cool bunch of history crossing paths when you got Terry Funk in there with these guys. Like, it's just kind of neat when you know, just guys you don't think of crossing paths at this point.
No, and it's cool to see Brett go one on one with Rock. You know, and like have them throw punches at each other and shit. I do think it's weird that, like, when he was legitimately cheated out of the win, the commentators shat all over Brett when they all saw the cheating.
Right.
Like, I think that kind of is a strange position to take on him here.
Yeah, they definitely make him look like a bitch. And honestly, he's not as aggressive and doesn't work as much as he has in past Rumbles. Like, he takes a lot more time off. He does take some stiff shots from Vader. But he does fade to the back. Like, Austin definitely eats up the screen time and the hype more than him throughout the match. Brett and Austin do gravitate back to each other. They drift a lot to each other. And another unique finish, just like 94, which pushes the feud together. And it was good booking, because Austin's the anti-hero. Brett is, like, just so pissed as he's standing tall in a changing world. But, yeah, then he whines and flips out. And instead of just beating up Austin, he's, like, yelling at Vince. Like, he just looks like a baby. So it's interesting, because he basically de facto wins, but he doesn't. And I just didn't see it as, like, his best outing. I thought the presentation and early portions carried it. But honestly, it's the least active he was. Not as many cool spots outside of, like, the Lawler thing and the finish.
Yeah.
He obviously plays a big role, and he's a key part of the match. But you would have thought going in maybe this would be his best, right? But it ends up not. It's his second best, but
yeah,
it's, like, a pretty decent drop off in score.
Yeah, like, he only has two eliminations. He eliminates Lawler and he tosses Diesel, and that's kind of shocking. You'd think that he'd have a few more based on who he is and there.
And he barely saved us from Diesel being in the final four match, because Diesel goes out from Brett right before Austin throws everyone out. So yeah,
in the final five, he lasts 21 minutes and 12 seconds, so he is a big part of the match. It's interesting that, like, coming out of it, he's the rightful winner who would have coasted to victory had it not been for cheating. And it works well, because his story was all about righting the wrongs of Steve Austin to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, the story's great, because the next night he's pissed, he quits, he walks, leaves to the crowd.
Yeah.
Then that's when Gorilla comes out and says, look, I can't change the winner of the match, but I can take away the title shot, and we're going to have Final Four, so he gets reinstated. And you can just feel him losing his grip on reality more and more over these weeks. It's, I think he gets looked at in a weird way because of how much it ends up paralleling his real career life later in 97. It's really a great story that they tell into his heel turn, like the way he slowly just loses the grip on what he's trying to hold as morals and what it means to him, and finally just gives in and snaps because Austin has driven him to this moment, and the fans' love for Austin and lack of love for him at this point has broken him.
Yeah, it's a great story. There's a reason it worked as well as it did. As far as presentation, I have him a bit down from the year before. I have him a 6/10 instead of 8.
Yeah, 6 as well for me. Definitely felt like a big deal, but he also felt like a backseat to Austin, especially down the stretch. Like he was the backseat until the finish.
Well, and that might be a testament too to how many other over guys there were in the ring also. Because we kind of
but you know what? Austin stood out above them. Like he could have too. He just didn't.
Right.
I also think though he was a little bit. I think everyone assumes because the Survivor Series match is so good that he came back and he was just himself again. I do think he's a little. It takes him a little bit to get the flow again.
Right.
When he comes back, so that could have been part of it here. He's just not back yet.
Yeah, and like, I mean, we probably need to give more credit to that Survivor Series match to Steve Austin. Because like he was legitimately one of the best wrestlers in the world at that point.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. I have him not a great work rate outing. I have him at 3 on 10.
I went 4. Which I had tied for 88, which we talked about. So yeah, I mean the Lawler spot's creative, the finish is creative, but beyond that, it's just a lot of laying around, honestly, from him.
Yeah. Yeah, and effectiveness, I got 5. Like he was fine. It was fine. He played his role, but like, For who he was at this point, I kind of expected a bit more.
Yeah, I give him a 6. I mean, he wins the match, basically. It's a major storyline. when he comes out, the whole showdown with Austin is great. So, I mean, I thought he was effective in his role. Like, I don't think anyone else could have played this role in the match like he did. So, I think that counts for something. And, you know, he does gain something out of it. He ends up going on to win the title, you know, a month later because of it. So,
yeah, I think he gains quite a bit out of it, at least character-wise, because of all the whining. And it just because it does create this entirely.
Well, and he gets the title match, a Final Four, which he wins. So,
yeah, I also think, too, like, I don't know if he's ever looked more badass as when he comes out to fight Austin.
Oh, yeah, definitely not.
Like, he's going to kill him. But that gave us a total score of 30 out of 60, which wasn't bad.
Right.
We didn't give our score for 94 total, which is 41 out of 60.
Right. So this is the second best by a decent chunk, but well below his best of 40 and 41. And we were pretty dead on in 94. Like,
yeah,
we were 21 and 20. So it's not like one of us drove that grade.
No,
we were close on all of them, honestly, except for 88 was the only one that we really had a spread on. Yeah. So it's second best. So based on grades from worst to best, we had his 1990 showing at a total score of 16. His 1991 showing at a total score of 22. 88 at a score of 23. 97 at 30. And then his number one performance, Royal Rumble career of Bret Hart, came in 1994 with a total overall score of 41, making it the best so far to date.
Yeah, so when we take his career as a whole, right? Like, I think it's interesting. He's got two Royal Rumble wins. One Royal Rumble win. Why did I say two? Because two people won that year. That's what it was.
Right. And he basically, I mean, he should have won.
He kind of won this one too.
If you combine the tie in this, you could say it's one.
Yeah. If we take his whole score as an aggregate, so because he has 5 Royal Rumbles and every Royal Rumble's out of 60, that so you're basically looking for a score out of 300.
Yep.
Following basic math. So for his aggregate, he's at 44%, which is not as high as I would have imagined. I would imagine he would have been at least a 50 or 60% guy. What are you a little surprised by that going into this project?
Maybe. I guess we need to see where other guys boil out, you know? Maybe that's high for us.
You're right.
We don't know yet.
Yeah.
But I mean, he did, you know, 90 wasn't great. 88, 91 were kind of middling, right? Middle of the pack, probably.
Yeah.
And 97, which should have been a big bell cow for him, wasn't. Like, it didn't really come through.
Yeah.
You know, that one didn't carry him like it probably should have. So really just has one great showing based on our numbers, I think. We'll see. I mean, 30 may end up being a great number. We'll see how as we go.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what a great showing is, because like even his best year, 41, like if you were going to score that, that's only like a 69%.
Right.
So like it's not like it's overwhelming. Like, I mean, like, look, I mean, I don't want to spoil this project, but Flair is probably 92 is probably going to be like 100%, right?
Right.
So
I would hope so.
Yeah.
That's the standard bearer of a Rumble.
Yeah. He might get dinged a bit for work rate a little bit in it, but I don't even know if you can do that. Like, I'm just trying to think of like, if you're going to
ever had, we'll get there, but yeah. We'll get there.
Let's not him. So look, his cumulative time in the ring in the Royal Rumble in 5 outings is 98 minutes and 51 seconds. So over an hour and a half in there. Total elimination, 7. Were there any big feuds that stuck out for you that were coming, like Rumble to Rumble?
We got Tito, those, you know, in 88 a little bit, but from like running feud, not really.
Nah.
There's not really a through line with a bunch of them. I guess you could say maybe him. Because even Sean really is only once. So his matches are kind of spread out other than 1990-91. So
yeah,
it was like the roster turnover was pretty big, you know, in between his performances.
Yeah. And I mean, we're doing something a little different this week because as we start building this roster of guys we're going through, we're going to have a list of like, I don't know, top 10 or something. Greatest right. performances, top 10 guys, but he's first in everything right now. So he's got the top five Rumbles of all time. He's got the best cumulative score. What are the final takeaways for Bret Hart as a Royal Rumble performer?
He's a good match driver. He's someone that probably is better early in the match, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
If you want like a steadying hand, but his best performance came when he came in late, but it was very storyline driven.
Right.
But he is a guy that isn't going to lay around. He's a guy that's going to work hard. He's going to, you know, mix it up. He's going to push the creativity limit. He's not just going to lay around or tease on the ropes. And you know, you could do much, much worse than having Bret Hart in your Royal Rumble. Yeah. He's also a guy that never missed a Rumble pay-per-view, I don't think, in his career. So, you know, we mentioned he was in five, but that meant he was on the undercard for the rest of them in 89, 92, 93, 95, 96. You know, he's in.
Oh, no, he missed 92.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yes. And 98. He missed 98 also.
Well, he was gone.
Took his ball and went home.
But anyway, he's in the title match in 93, 95, and 96. He's in the world title match. So, and you know, 89 is really kind of the only throwaway.
Yeah, I think he's just such an important guy to have in there because I think what really makes a great Royal Rumble is when there's guys in there that you care enough about that you either want to see them thrown out or not thrown out. That's what, like,
yep.
Rumbles become middling when like you're kind of ambivalent. Like you might like some of the guys. It's like I remember like 2012. It comes down to Sheamus and Chris Jericho, and I like both those guys, but like, you know. They're kind of ambivalent figures, I think, at least at that point.
Right.
Anyway, so it's like I think he's important because as of 91, he's someone the fans are invested in 100%. They're screaming for his every move.
Agreed.
Yeah.
So that brings it into our first competitor, Bret the Hitman Hart. So our next episode, Aaron, we're going to tackle more than one guy. We're going to hit a few here. We have we're going to do Butch Reed. We're going to do Tito Santana and Jim the Anvil Neidhart. So number 2, 3, and 4 in the 88 Rumble we're going to cover. So Santana's got a decent amount of matches.
But it'll go past
Neidhart, an okay amount. And then Butch Reed, just the one. So we'll dive into that in our second episode. And there's a lot going on in the North South Connection. Some new stuff coming in January and into the new year. So just check us out. We deep dive into all kinds of promotions, all kinds of topics. You know, we're in on TNA early days. We're in on ECW in the mid-90s. In on the Monday Night Wars. We're in on the Ruthless Aggressive era. We have a lot of list-based shows. We got some sports. We got some comics. We got some TV. All kinds of stuff going on. I love all the hosts. I love all the shows. You know, I thought, you know, 2020 was a tough year. But honestly, the growth and birth of North South Connection was one of my highlights of the year. And, you know, that's a lot of kudos to you, to Chad, and then to all of the other hosts that do all the hard work on the feed. So
be
sure to subscribe.
And to you.
Thanks, buddy. Be sure to subscribe on any podcatcher app, facebook.com/NorthSouthConnection. I'm at JT the Pod Guy on Twitter. Aaron's at Aaron D. George. Mention the PTB Facebook group if you want to get in on providing feedback for these. It would be cool as well. And like we said, this will drop every other Monday here. The North South Connection. Any final thoughts, Aaron?
No, thanks for listening. Let us know what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong, and keep leaving us those comments. It's a combat sport!
You've been eliminated! Goodbye.
Goodbye.